Welcome to AIJ Cast, a podcast featuring conversations and performances at the intersection of art, inspiration, and justice. I'm your host, Marth Ames Sanders. On this episode, part two of our conversation with Dr. Johanna Junker. Dr. Yo is an educator, a visual artist, and is assistant professor of art, religion, and culture at Claremont School of Theology. She spoke with us from her home in Oregon. We pick up our conversation speaking more about the practice of embodied artistic theological education.
I like to think about this idea of acolhimento, of creating pedagogies of affection, pedagogies of contact and sensation. So out of this, I try to think of how it is that we can, in virtual spaces, create some embodiment. So always beginning with a centering moment that's contemplative, engaging the visual arts, which is pretty much the content of the classes, but asking folks to be in touch, you know, with what is the prayer that your body wants to make today? Mm. What is the prayer that wants to come to the surface? And how do we access that, right? So there are little prayers that we whisper sometimes to the parts of our bodies that need some healing. There are prayers that we dance to. And then I have an arts cafe that, you know, goes along with the classes where we come to put in practice through, you know, artistic exercises with the visual arts mostly, but with some music too, and to wrestle with the texts that we're reading and the scholarship. Mm. So how do we transfer this into the body? How does this become an embodied way of knowing, right? An embodied way of relating to text, relating to scholarship, relating to thoughts. And that has been a very powerful space because community is created, number one, and community beyond the students who are signed up for the class. Yesterday, we had the presence of two beautiful children who engaged with the breathing, being, praying meditation, and they got it.
Yeah.
The word that they chose was itchy feelings. I have itchy feelings.
Right.
That I need to deal with today. And then the other beautiful, beautiful, very wise children, very present children, was anxious, is what she wrote in the middle of the page. And then she even realized, and I think she was maybe like in the age range of 10 to 13, I want to say. She drew an eye, lines that became an eye. And then she said, wow, this is exactly what I was able to do with this exercise, was to see what I was feeling. I said, yes, yes. Can you teach the adults in the room now how to do that? But if that wasn't like this informal space of a cafe, we would have missed the opportunity to learn from the very real, the very wise experience of children during this pandemic, because I think they're more in touch with what is happening than we are.
Well, you think about how, like, if a child is upset, they will cry. If a child is frustrated, they might collapse on the floor in a ball.
Right.
And adults, we are too mature to do that kind of thing. Yeah, because we have also disconnected our body from our thought and our emotion. And so it makes us less able to do those kind of things. My avenue for this is improvisation, theater games, which is all about embodiment. It's all about playfulness.
Playfulness.
To access things that we are not able to do otherwise.
That's so interesting that you say that, because that was a word that came up repeatedly yesterday in this exercise, in this like sort of playtime. It's really, we're having playtime.
Right, right.
Tell that to the administration of the school.
Yeah, right, right, right.
It's such a profound and such an important and fundamental space to be in.
Yeah.
Because it's where we're able to kind of return home to our bodies and allow for some kind of spaciousness that allows us to see the woundedness and the joys of the now. And the word play came up over and over again yesterday. It was actually one of the words that one of the students wrote. They were like, I don't play anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do we subvert this logic, create a confluence of encounters that resist isolation, fragmentation, that respond to the now?
The way I often talk about it is, I call it the serious work of play.
Yes. And doesn't even have to be serious.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, again, you know, my tribe, my Presbyterians, if I tell them it's a serious work of play, they go,
they're
oh,
like,
okay, we can do
I'm
it.
Ready
yeah,
for
now
it.
We're ready. Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious.
Because it's not that serious and it's not that much work. It's play. But if you call it the serious work of play, then they're on board. Yeah.
Yeah. So my question is always like how to create a poetics of presence, a poetics of embodiment, a poetics of resistance in these learning communities.
Yeah.
And I think the creative practices, they help us weave, potentialize, ignite, and sort of invite us to embody, to create, to play. I also created something with my colleague Isaiah Young when we were at the Pacific School of Religion teaching spiritual formation. And it was a series that was called the Spiritual Formation Care Packages. And that became a series of centering and creative exercises that invited co-teachers and co-learners to meditate, to embody, and to create freely for 1 hour per week. That was part of the requirements for the class. And they were able to recover spiritual traditions that had been lost to their practices from, you know, their lineages. They uncovered and unearthed and unsettled this sort of creative vigor, the power of spiritual practice, and also play. Mm. Expand our capacity to see, to touch, to create. Thinking about the arts as this locus for resistance, rupture, implosion, and explosion, as Ansaldúa always reminds us. To shock ourselves into new ways of perceiving is what she says.
You've mentioned a couple of times already, and because it's so intertwined in your work, the work of decolonization.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, I mean, I think about your dissertation, Unsettling the Landscape, which, you know, once a dissertation is done, there's a kind of joy of it being done.
Yes.
And yet there's parts of it, of course, that are just continue to inform everything that you do. So I would love to hear you tie that into what we're talking about, not just talking about it, but actually doing the work of it.
Mm-hmm. I think decolonization, it's at the very heart of what I'm doing, at the heart of my impetus. La vida imprescindible is a phrase in Spanish, like the vitality of life.
Mm.
What drives me toward life is this work of decolonizing our spiritual practices, our ways of being and knowing, this study of mine. Not only academic, but with actual folks who are keeping these practices of the spirit alive for centuries and centuries and centuries. So I talked a little bit about like the practice of creating altares or altars in our homes as a way of reclaiming spiritual agency that has been denied to us. Thinking of us as sort of like the temple keepers.
Mm.
That were decolonizing these practices and looking toward a future with like a kind of courage and strength and deep awareness that the world has ended for so many people so many times. Mm. And yet here we are.
Mm.
We're still here, right? We're taught from a very young age, I think, not to see too much, talk too much, question too much, ask too much. And this path, I think, into awareness is a path of decolonial and anti-colonial exercises because as an artist, we tap into the realm of the unsayable, right? The realm of what begins to emerge when we are really deeply attuned to our bodies and to the language of spirit.
Mm.
So art, spiritual practices, I think they conjure just that. Like their mother tongue is poetics, right? And it is a poetics of resistance that sees beyond the reach of what the eyes can see and imagines worlds into being that are not here yet. So to decolonize is to unearth, unhood our eyes, our senses, so we can get to the heart, the marrow, so to speak, of things. And we need these spaces, these apertures, these poetic suspensions so that we can access the interior life of spirit that sometimes is hidden within these colonial structures. There is something that Clarissa Pinkola Estes writes in the introduction to the book Women Who Glow in the Dark. A curandera reveals traditional Aztec secrets of physical and spiritual health. And the author is Elena Avila. And Pinkola Estes writes the introduction, and she says something: nothing can be lost forever that has been loved forever. That makes me very teary, because I think that is the worth of decolonizing, is to recover, right? To remember into existence that which we have loved forever. And I think our ritual is a way of keeping these things alive. As Dandy Cat also writes in her Creating Dangerously, she writes that the artists are those who keep things alive. So we're alive. We're alive with this animating force. And so how do we allow for ourselves to make these passages between worlds, as Ansaldúa often writes about, right? Neplantera that she is. How do we enter, we heal, we translate spirit to soul? How do we remember each other into being, into wholeness, into healing? That's the work of decolonization. And it's, you asked about my dissertation, my work with my dissertation. If I could have written a dissertation in Portuguese in a decolonial institution,
sure.
Or if I could have performed my dissertation, it would be a long process of unearthing.
Dr. Johanna Juncker on AIJCast. We'll be back with more of our conversation in just a moment, but first, a quick word. As always, I invite you to stop by the AIJCast website, AIJCast.com, where you will find links to our artists and to their news, information, and products. I particularly call your attention to the shop section of our website, which links to a lot of amazing art. This includes music, paintings, books, and the always popular AIJCast swag. We also have our full 4 years of archives. It's all there, and so much more, at AIJCast.com. And now, back to more of our conversation with Dr. Johanna Juncker. We pick up that conversation speaking more about her dissertation entitled Unsettling the Landscape.
The word desoterramento has a root, soterramento. And I find it interesting that in Portuguese is the masculine noun. And it indicates a process by which something is covered by soil, debris, wood, or a forceful movement. This movement can be caused by an earth or human-induced phenomenon. So like if we think about mudslides, they cause soterramento, floods, heavy rains, right? Implosions to clear land, construction of cities, highways, nuclear test sites, artworks in the southwest of the United States, because that's what I write about, is the land art movement. And part of what I'm trying to do with that dissertation is to desoterrar, unearth all of the forceful movements that have hidden the histories and the colonial traces that still exist in these art practices in the southwest of the U.S. So this verb, soterrar, is very important to the work of decolonization, because underneath these mounds of earth and sand, we will find bones and genocide and colonization and annihilation, trapping, submerging, devastating, obliterating, undermining, all of it. I think in many ways our histories have been soterradas, have been buried. And I think Western epistemologies have seemed to forget that how we have told histories was by this forceful movement of burying some of these stories and these bodies. And in order to reach matter, bodies, epistemes, and these histories that have been soterradas, we have to go down this descending path and sink into the layers of heavy materials, what I call epistemological and ontological debris. Memories can undergo soterramento, as can histories. So I learned at the end of this project, of the dissertation project, that that was a metaphor. That's what described the metaphor of my soul, my body, spirit, place, time, that wanted to get to the bottom, so to speak, of things, to understand, right? To stand below, underneath what happened, and to make life affirming choices, and also give visibility, power, and authority to indigenous artists mm-hmm. working in the contemporary kind of moment that is resisting in very decolonial ways all of this violence. I'm hoping to publish this sometime because I think it's an important movement to try to do, to look at land art in those ways. Part of this excavation began before I started the PhD journey. To me, this is like divine electricity, just like conducting bodies in places and spaces. Because I remember that before I started the PhD program, I attended a conference in New Mexico, right outside Santa Fe, because I was scheduled to attend this anyway. It was a conference on art, spirituality, and architecture. And I had just finished my master's program, and I was thinking about applying to a PhD program. So it was like in that suspended space between the two programs. And I found myself in this conference space, and the keynote speaker was Rena Swenzel, who's unfortunately passed away after that conference. She was the keynote speaker, and she was talking about architecture, spirituality, and the Pueblo ways of being. And after the conference, I went over to her and I, you know, greeted her and thanked her for everything that she taught us. It was a magical kind of like 2 hours where my mind was just exploding at every turn, every comma, every period, every pause. I was like, what's happening? I feel so disoriented, but this also feels so familiar. And there's something about what she was saying that, you know, took me back home to Brazil, where, you know, I was born, raised, grew up, lived until my 30s. So, like, I asked her about, you know, this project that I had in mind, if she would be willing to give me some kind of, like, wisdom or something. And I described what I wanted to do with my project for the PhD. And she looked at me and she said, "I am not convinced," she said. She listened very profoundly to what I said. And she said that she wasn't convinced. There was, like, she's, you know, that face you make when you're like, this doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
And then she said, "Listen to the whispers of the land. It'll tell you where to go." She passed away shortly after that encounter. And towards the end of my dissertation, I was out doing research in two different museums, one in Arizona and one in New Mexico. And I was looking through the archives of this artist that I wrote about, Nora Naranjo Morse, who is a Santa Clara Pueblo woman as well, lives in New Mexico. And I discuss her extensively in chapter 4. And I met her, I had the opportunity to meet her in New Mexico in March of 2019, right before I turned my dissertation in. And when we finished the conversation, she said, "You know, Johanna, I have one thing to tell you. When we enter into any Pueblo ceremony or when we exit them, the charge that we're given is to seek life." I have chills just remembering all of this. And when I, while I was exiting the archives of the Heard Museum where I was doing the research with her, like there's a full like archival collection on her work there. I was gifted with an exhibition catalog. The director of the archives, his assistant, she gives me this little catalog and she's like, "You know, this is a gift." And guess who had written the introduction to this exhibition catalog? It was Rena. I had chills up and down my spine. I was like, "Why is she the author of the introduction?" And she was like, "Don't you know? She is Nora's sister."
What?
Yes.
Wow.
So this project of unearthing is tied, right? It's woven by these two strings of listen to the whispers of the land and seek life.
Wow.
And so that's sort of what I try to do. And the whispers of the land told me that the land art movement in the Southwest of the United States still is oriented toward colonial delusions. of using the land as resource and not as a source. And that the indigenous artists in the United States and all of North America who are, you don't have to be indigenous and be decolonial. That's not what the project is trying to say. But those who are engaging with the land approach it from a very different nexus and a way of being and becoming than we do in the West.
Wow.
And so I kind of chart, you know, and talk about these artists and their works and how the land is this place of emergence, right? Of undoing and redoing and becoming and relearning. And re-rooting continuously.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Yeo, if you had a charge for our listeners, or benediction, if you want to be really churchy about it, a piece of advice, some wisdom, what would it be?
I am going to ask permission to Nora Naranjo-Morse to read. And it's a very, it's a long, beautiful, powerful, transcendent and also very present kind of poem. But there is there are a couple lines from it that I think really encapsulate the wisdom of these learnings that I shared with you, because none of this is my own knowledge, right? This is knowledge that is shared and built collectively. So here it goes. It's called This Vessel. In this vessel, sanctuary of our recollections, there are treasures from the beyond. Beyond where mud-packed riverbed wind around, over, under, and through countless lives, weaving old men's sash tales through the very breath of our emergence songs, around, over, under, and around our recollections. Tales that tease coyote across the moonlight, spring through pollen underfoot, tracking April corn seeds germinating under rich soil. His mother's dreams move him across and over her fertile ground. In this vessel, tender love sonnets play loose and sweet between crisp and white sheets, over and across, chapters echoing reverence to passion clouds, blending into one raining, steady, and sure. Listen. Listen to the stories of our resistance, layered into the walls of this vessel. Long ago war cries, reminding us revolution burns in our memory. Once when we were caged, when intruders set boundaries and fenced in our father's dreams, intruders who cut the very breath from our mother, forcing our war cries, loud and fierce, to awaken our rebirth. Revolution, regeneration, celebration.
Johanna Juncker, thanks for being on AIJCast.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Be well, everyone. Be healed. Be whole.
Johanna Juncker on AIJCast. You can connect with her through her website, johannajuncker.com. That's YOHANAJUNKER.com. On our next episode, pastor and hip-hop artist Julian DeShazier, a.k.a. JQuest. AIJCast is made possible through the support of listeners like you. We can only do what we do because of your support, so please do take just a moment and go to our website, AIJCast.com, where you can click on the link that says support. And we thoroughly love to interact with you on social media. We are there on a number of platforms where our handle is, shockingly, AIJCast. Our theme music comes from our house band Marred Fame, and we are engineered, mixed, and produced by Mr. YOLO himself, Al Mudif, who is really down on my selfie game.
You know that face you make when you're like,
And I'm your host, Martham Sanders, encouraging you to go, rather stay put, create some beauty of your own, and remember that the world isn't truly beautiful until it's beautiful for all. Until next time, justice and peace!